We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And together we are here today to help you find some joy in your journey as we join up with another fierce female with an inspirational story. Joining us is a national champion, both as an athlete and scholar. So let's learn more about my dear friend, Dr. Judy Elliott. Judy is the former chief academic officer of the LA Unified School District, where she was responsible for curriculum and instruction from early childhood through adult, professional development, innovation, accountability, assessment, after-school programs, state and federal programs, health and human services, magnet programs, language acquisition for both English and standard English learners, parent outreach, and intervention programs for all students. Well, that's a lot. I think that's something we definitely have in common with one another. And before that, she was the chief of teaching and learning in the Portland, Oregon Public Schools. And prior to that, assistant superintendent of student support services in the famous Long Beach Unified School District in California. Judy has also worked as a senior researcher at the National Center on Educational Outcomes at the University of Minnesota. She started her career as a special education classroom teacher and then a school psychologist. And during this time, she was an adjunct professor at the State University College at Buffalo, New York, where she taught graduate courses in curriculum and instruction and applied behavior analysis in the Department of Exceptional Education. In 2020, she was appointed by the Commissioner John King as the first ever New York State Distinguished Educator. And in that capacity, she supported and oversaw the Buffalo City School District priority schools. Judy continues to assist districts, cooperatives, schools, national organizations, state and federal departments of education in their effort to update and realign systems and infrastructures around curriculum instruction, assessment, data use, leadership accountability, and that includes all students and renders a return on their investment. Her research interests focus on systems change and leadership, equitable and accessible, effective instruction for all students, database decision-making, and accelerated outcomes for student achievement. She has trained thousands of students, teachers, and administrators in the U.S. and abroad in areas of integrated service delivery systems, MTSS, effective use of data, linking assessment to district and classroom instruction and intervention, strategies and tactics for effective instruction, curriculum adaptation, collaborative teaching, and behavior management. You know, Keisha, she's published over 51 articles, and I think there's more coming. She's written books and chapters, technical and research reports, and several books. She sits on many editorial boards for professional journals and is an active member of many, many, many professional organizations that we'll learn about. She's nationally known for her work in MTSS and RTI, and she has led many successful projects in this area and actively continues to support school districts and national organizations in the work. You can see that she is clearly a Shiro.
Oh my goodness. Unbelievable, Shiro, that we are so lucky to have in our honor roll community. So yay, welcome Judy. And each week, Judy, we explore models of leadership together. A subject matter that you are clearly an expert in. And we focus on what we refer to as a pattern of M, asking our guests who their role models are and how they have impacted your life. And then consider your mentors. And then we're going to turn to you in the mirror, what you see as a reflection looking back, and any movements we should be watching that inspire or ignite maverick moments. Tongue twisters, Frances.
I love it. And Keisha, don't you forget, we want to catch any of that edubabble stuff that we do, like, you know, phrases or acronyms or initializing that we use as educators. So Judy, I'm curious to learn more about this thing called RTI. I've heard RTI squared and MTSS. You're clearly the national expert in this space. Help us understand this edubabble.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here today. And I would just start by clarifying, I don't believe in the expert model. I think there's a lot of really smart people that can do this work together. And so together we're better. I would say doing the work of RTI and MTSS is really, you know, response to instruction and intervention, multi-tiered systems of support. It's really around using your data to make good decisions for kids. And so it's looking at your return on investment. And we know in education, people are working really, really hard. They may not be working on the right stuff. And so the work around MTSS is basically going in and, you know, putting your best self to the table, digging into what's working well for students and staff and adults and what's not. And then figuring out what that return on investment is, knowing where we want to go and how do we get there using data-driven problem-solving processes.
You know, I work with a lot of districts on transformation, and I use the MTSS model and framework extensively as kind of a guide for, you know, what are we doing right, what are we not doing right, and how do we need to fix that to kind of attend to our numbers. So I'm super thankful now that you're part of the honor roll, because I'm going to put your number in my phone.
Fabulous. And I, you know, and I would say when people think about RTA and MTSS, they think about three tiers, right? Three tiers of support. And then there's like six critical components, leadership being the top one for me. Can't do this work without leadership, communication, collaboration, you know, infrastructures and systems. So there's so many pieces to MTSS. And I think, you know, having people understand, you know, to widen the horizon that it's not just about tiered instruction and supports, it's about a lot of other buckets that really make sense. Yeah. So happy to hear, Keisha, that you're working with folks.
Whole
on
school
that.
Design. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, now we're ready to get started with our M's. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. We're going to start with role models.
Okay.
Tell us who your role models are and why.
You know, there's so many role models. I really, you know, did a lot of reflecting getting ready to have this conversation with you both. And I think for me, you know, when I think of the role models that I'll share with you shortly, they're quiet, peaceful activists, the leaders who really dedicated their lives to their calling, had their fingerprints on a whole lot of things. They weren't on front stage, you know, center folks. They were really inspired and self-driven. And so I would say my role models also come from my own family of origin, if I may. You know, I didn't grow up in a Norman Rockwell family home, last of six kids. You know, if the foster care system would have been very active during the time of growing up, all of the family would have been removed from the house. So I look at that and say, okay, so you can take two pathways when you have that sort of upbringing. You know, growing up in self-protection mode, happy to be here today, you know, still alive. I look at my role, my sort of my mentors and my role models as those that had humble upbringings as well. And they chose to do advocacy work versus playing the victim piece. So I think of things like one of my first ones would be, I think of Mother Teresa. None of the people that I'm going to say briefly are without controversy, because leaders, no matter what you are, leaders, there's always some sort of controversy or something that's going to be said. So when you think about Mother Teresa, you know, she knew her calling at a young age. You know, she just developed systems and supports for the poor and downtrodden and that didn't have any other options. She mobilized the best she could with no resource when she started. So another one for, so yeah, so, and it's not about the Catholicism that she was, you know, she advocated for. It was really what she did and where she came from. Another one for me is Rosa Parks. You know, she's known for, you know, the bus incident. And it's interesting because she's not the first woman who had the bus incident. There were two other women well before Rosa Parks that had similar situations, but never really, you know, made it to the top of the news. Rosa Parks, to me, you know, an amazing, she took her seat in the bus in the midst of just a huge controversial storm around, you know, the murder of Emmett Till and, you know, two other activists that had just been murdered. And I say all that in context because it would have been very easy for her to give up her seat and move when requested. But given and knowing what she was in, and she was very quiet and serene and behind the scenes in the work that she did around advocacy. And, You know, and she always says, if you read her story, she always says that people say I didn't get up and move because I was tired. She said, I didn't get up and move because I was tired of being humiliated and being told to move. And so I really resonate with this, because in the midst of just chaos and craziness, she stood her ground and became her own sort of icon in this work about standing your ground for what you believe in. And I think the other one, the last one I will share with you is Madiba, Nelson Mandela. I had an experience a couple summers ago to actually go visit his cell where he was held in prison and hard labor work camps for many, many years. And so, you know, knowing his story, knowing about apartheid, knowing about what he went through and how he is still considered the father of the nation and wasn't bitter or didn't have revenge after all that he had gone through. So again, not without controversy, but incredible leaders that did, in my mind, the right things for folks that needed some support in really tough times of either, you know, racism or poverty, or, you know, just people that really suffered because they didn't have equity and access to things. So there's many more, but those are just the ones for me that resonate. And so I will just leave it at that.
Yeah. It's powerful as you give those examples about knowing your calling and standing in your truth, and the tension that we really admire in leaders. I see all of those things in you, Judy. And it reminds me, Mother Teresa has this beautiful quote that says, it's not about how much you do, but about how much love you put into what you do that counts. And I definitely, definitely see that in the role models that you've highlighted. And I'm curious, as you think about these role models, and we shift to the concept of mentors, who are some of the mentors that have really guided you and helped you lift up what you've seen in these role models?
Yeah, it's interesting. As I reflect on that, I think I would say that my mentors have been strong people who at their core are all about integrity, honesty, understanding, you know, understated, I would say, understated superhuman capacity, but very quiet in their approach to leading. They are people who have really dedicated their life to paying it forward to others and raising others up, developing potential, and really, for me, showcasing and uncovering my potential that I didn't even realize I had, who pushed me to higher levels than I never thought I ever would do. So it really, you know, growing up with what I grew up with, you know, was very serious. So they taught me how to not take myself so serious and to giggle more and to belly laugh more and to have fun while, you know, doing your commitment to the drive of what you want to do. So I think that all of the people that I would consider my mentors have been, you know, people who have seen me for what I am able to do. And when I was a younger person, starting back in my undergraduate days in college, there was a professor of mine who just saw something in me that I never realized. And she basically said, nope, you're not going to go down that path. You're going to lean toward this path because this is where your potential is, and help me discover, you know, my own self-reflection and self-appreciation for what I had. So I would say that all of the people that I see as mentors are people who are incredible leaders, very loving, giving, kind, honest. And for me, people that will push you to higher levels than you ever thought possible.
Isn't it fascinating when people can see things in you that you don't see, mm-hmm. and they bring it to your attention and you're like, no, never. And then when you look back after you, especially like you and I'm sure Frances, I know I have taken on their advice, and then you look back and you're like, I couldn't imagine my life any different. But at that point in time when they were mentoring you, you couldn't have imagined it any different than where you were right then. So I love to hear people talk about their mentors, because you can see their imprint on your lives so clearly.
Well, if I can add to that, I mean, think because of the mentors, I've basically, you know, I crafted throughout my adult life five basic tenets that have really guided me, you know, through my life. And one thing, and this is all because of the mentors and my experiences, role models, everything that we've talked about so far. One of them is, you know, find something you're really passionate about. And that started for me when I was in high school and I started volunteering in rooms for special education students. And back in those days, it, you know, they were not called upon very highly. They weren't thought of very highly. They, you know, or put in separate rooms or in the basements of the schools and all that. So just finding something you're really passionate about. I spent a lot of time growing up in missions, playing my violin and singing duets with my sister. Just doing things that really meant a lot to me and really helped me realize my passion. Another one is, you know, surround yourself with folks that are smarter than you are. And so a tenet would really is, you know, be with smarter people, play up in the game of life, if you will. And so having people challenge me in different ways. Another one I would say, the third one I would say is seek out allies and mentors rather than those that adore you. Because we can always be surrounded by people that love us, but it's harder to be with people who are going to be honest and say, hey, you know what? That wasn't your best foot forward. Let's see if we can make it better next time. So I just think that that's a really huge piece that I've learned from my mentors, that they're principals, they have great integrity, and they walk the walk of leadership. I think the other one I would say that has imprinted on me, Keisha, to your point, is that find the courage to do something you're not ready to do. Be risk takers. Really, you know, I was a school psychologist and a teacher, and I left the K-12 public education system, go work at the University of Minnesota with like huge researchers that are known all over the world for what they do. And here I am, this little baby, you know, teacher psychologist coming into a huge research institution. There's multiple things. Being asked to be the assistant superintendent of Long Beach Unified School District and a job I'd never done before. Somebody seeing something in me that allowed me to do that. And then finally, I would just say my last tenet that I would just share with you at this moment in time is just learn to say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and really mean it. Really know how to say, you know, humble, I'm not an expert. I goofed up. Let's figure this out together. So I would say, to your point, all of the mentors and the role models that I really look for, it really helped me develop those tenets that I live my life by.
Oh, and I'm so happy you shared those, because I know those tenets are going to resonate with a lot of our audience too. So tell me a time that you looked in the mirror and saw a leader looking back.
You know, I never had that VA moment, right? I never had that, oh, here, I'm the leader. Look in the mirror. There you are. I really think that to me, it was the day that I would be reading some research or studies or literature around leadership and say, huh, I just did that like a year ago. Or, huh, I did that about 5 years ago. Or putting a vision into play, that you coming together with like a vision and using data to make some planning and then actually seeing it come to fruition. I've had the honor of being able to do that a couple times. So for me, it was more of an unfolding experience, an unfolding realization. But I would say a couple things sort of stick out to me when I reflect on this. I think my first holy moly moment when I was asked to teach graduate school courses at the age of like 26. So right out of, you know, my own schooling, and I'm teaching students that were well older than I was. And I'm, you know, teaching these core classes in a graduate program. So that to me was I really had to step up, knowing that I was the youngest person in the room and I'm teaching these like required courses of folks. I think another one to me that would help me say, huh, I must have some leadership capacity somewhere, is when Carl Cohn approached me to become the assistant superintendent of Long Beach Unified School District. And I did not sit in the traditional chairs of K-12 education. I never was a principal, but I was very good at what I did as a school psychologist, as a teacher. I did some administrative work, and then to be put in a position, I had a national reputation for the work I did around special education. And so that matters. He saw something in me that pushed me well beyond my own experience. I think another one was the first time I was ever asked to do a keynote address. It's like, what? You're asking me to do a keynote? Oh my goodness. And that was like, it rattled me to the core, because it's like being a humbled sort of leader that doesn't look, don't want to be on the front stage or front page of the anything, is to have somebody ask you to do something. And then the other one that was incredibly humbling to me is I was asked to do the commencement speech of my alma mater. So these are some of the things that, you know, sort of stick out to me, that there wasn't one like, oh, wow, look, now I'm a leader. I think that the last thing that I would say that probably puts a pin in all of this is that when I was asked to be the chief academic officer of the Los Angeles Unified School District, something that Frances is very familiar with. How do you prepare for that? And so as I was, getting ready to start, I started having these dreams, and I was dreaming about me being in, crowds and at events with this orange, bright orange jumpsuit on. So I'm like, you can't run and hide from anyone when you have a bright orange jumpsuit on. And so I was sharing this with a friend of mine. We were in DC doing, some sort of something, and we were riding in the cab going to the airport. And I said, David Prosty, dear friend, may he rest in peace, said, I said, David, I'm having these dreams. And I said, I start this job on Monday. And I'm like, how do you prepare for this? And he looked at me and he just said, Judy, go do what you do. Just go do what you do. And that was the best thing, advice that anyone could have ever said, because you can't prepare for some of these things that we're put into. You just go do what you do. You lead with integrity. You're honest. You do everything that you know is right, and that you can put your head on your pillow at night and know you did the best thing you could for kids. That to me just took all of my anxiety away, and I just sort of exhaled and said, okay, I got this. So I would say to you that, I look back, leadership skills for me, I think it started in high school when I started volunteering in special ed rooms. I was a female athlete in high school, swimming on the boys swim team. It was unheard of. There was no girl swimming on boys swim teams back in the 70s. And I sort of did that. And that I didn't realize then that was sort of role modeling and being a leader for other female athletes that really were very good and needed to be, challenged to higher levels. I think back when I think of, and four-time All-American, NC2A All-American, MVP, and athletes in college, and then being able to give back to younger athletes, whether it's coaching or whether it's, doing some volunteer at high schools to build the capacity and the confidence of other, other women. So lots of those types of things really sort of float around when I think about, like, how did you know you were becoming a leader? It was experiences along the way that sort of let me know a little bit that I had a bit of leadership in me.
Definitely a metamorphosis. And you've mentored so many and changed the lives of so many women and kiddos. I remember reading some of your work and then thinking, I'm going to get to work with this remarkable woman. And it's just been... I've enjoyed hearing your stories of integrity, from what you've done as a child to as a, your life as a scholar and as a leader. And, you are definitely a woman who has changed the world. You have put that pebble in the pond and it's rippled through, or perhaps even a boulder. And I'm curious, as you think about your work as a woman and you look at other women that you admire, what are some things that you're seeing about how women really are changing the world?
It's a great question, because I think there are a lot of women now that are standing up and speaking out and not taking things for granted, that maybe others would see it as a part of the day to day, but women are not given that opportunity. I think positive statistics, simply CEOs of large corporations, superintendents of schools, vice presidents, we have congresswomen, we have female mayors, we've got police chiefs, we have all of these roles that people have been in that really are there because we've had some pretty hard charging, strong women that have been able to step up into those roles.
When you think of those women, are there any mavericks or people who are like really disrupting the system that like we know, and I know some of the people that, probably fall on a lot of people's lists is like Malala. So who do you think of today as a woman that is really changing the game so that 10 years from now, we're like, man, if that woman hadn't done that thing, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah, well, Malala definitely is one of them. I also would say, as I think about this, I think as something is just Simone Biles and what she did for female athletes and how what the controversy and all the stuff that was flying around her decision not to compete in her Olympic trials or the Olympics period. What she did to stand up for all the other women that had been exposed to what she and her other gymnast colleagues did. So for me, those are huge mavericks in disrupting things. You know, I think the likes of Liz Cheney, who's in controversy where she is right now and how she is speaking up and speaking her truth, regardless of politics or whatever and what she's going through. I think for me, it's not about the political stance and the political views. It's about how she is navigating with grace the stuff that's flying at her. You know, we already talked about Malala. I also think, I think about Greta Thunberg, who is a young lady who has Asperger's and OCD and had selective mutism while she was growing up because of her stance with the global climate and her issues and her beliefs around that. So I think, you know, these are just a couple women that I think 5 years from now, we're going to be going, wow. I mean, to think that you're a youngster on the world stage and your protesting of the global climate change creates rallies and protests all around the world. And a youngster with a disability on top of that. So I think that, you know, there are so many mavericks out there, but those are the couple that really sort of come to mind that are sort of currently in the news.
Yeah. And as you said, they're navigating with incredible grace, and especially these young leaders, we can learn so much from them. And to do that work, you and I both know, and Keisha, we talk about this all the time, you need a lot of energy to sustain that work. And so how does Judy Elliott take care of herself? What are some self-care recommendations you might give to our listening audience?
You know what? It's self-care is absolutely critical. You can't take care of others if you don't take care of yourself. And so I would just say, you know, get some exercise, eat clean, get as much rest as you can, belly laugh as much as you can with good close friends. When you're in large positions, it's not necessarily safe for you to be yourself. So you have to be around those that are loving, that are safe, that are you know, confidential, so that you can have a good time and do things that bring you joy that are unrelated to your work, no matter what that is. Find something you love to do and just do it, you know, and indulge yourself into that. So you really have to, and it's really hard. And Francis, you know this as well. And Keisha, you know this as well. It's hard to take care of yourself when you have such weight on your shoulders as women leaders to just take care of lots of things. I think the other thing I would tell you, and this was really sort of the start for me to my road to wherever I am today, is that really make sure that you keep your own stuff in check. You know, you got to make sure that you know who you are. You need to know your family of origin stuff. You need to know what your triggers are. Because when you're tired and run down and somebody may say something to you and you sort of fly off, you just have to know where that came from. So I would just say, you got to take care of yourself, do what makes you happy, and yeah, I think that's it for that one. You can edit that.
I love knowing where your triggers are, because I mean, I have a trigger named Cooper.
Yes,
my dog. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think there is a time when you react and you're like, "Why did I react that way? That is really bizarre." Yeah. And then you think, "Oh, it's because it ignited this thing over here that's mm-hmm. not even related." You yep. know, and you really have to keep it in check. And then usually it involves a phone call, an apology.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of those humble things that you
ten
were talking about earlier.
Ten
yep.
At five.
Ten at five. You're like, ooh, okay. Can somebody help me find that phone number?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think having a community like we're developing with Honor Roll is also hopefully going to be a place where people can come for self-care, because people like you can share all of the great wisdom that you have with our younger members who are just kind of starting their leadership journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want them to make, we hopefully they can benefit from our mistakes or our
Absolutely.
Learnings.
And enjoy our belly laughs together.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
I don't know. My belly laughs have a whole different context since I've had a baby.
You're so funny. But when you think about that, really think about that. When you're together with men, women, friends, and you finally let loose and have a belly laugh, you're going, holy crap, that felt good. I can't remember when I laughed so hard or laughing till your tears run out of your eyes. As leaders, we don't necessarily get to do that very often. So that's why it's just so incredibly important to make sure you have the joy in your life so that you can take care of others. So yeah, belly laughing. Good cue, friends.
Belly laughing's awesome. And I struggle with it. Just going to say.
Yeah.
And Francis, though, I struggle with a lot of stuff that Francis is my checkpoint for. And I'm so thankful and blessed to have her as such a good friend. So hopefully at the end of my journey, I will be a better person because Frances Gibson was in my life.
Better belly laugher.
She's got a lot of work to do though. She's just getting started.
Big virtual hugs here. Big virtual hugs.
Well, now we're going to move to a little game of insights. And we like to play this to kind of finish off our podcast. And it's a finish this thought game.
Okay.
So here is the first one. An event that changed my worldview.
I would have to say the pandemic.
I think it's changed a lot of people's worldview.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
did you suffer from like lockdown? I don't know if we've named it yet, but you know, where you just had a lot of self-reflection during lockdown and, or were you like, yay, lockdown? That's how I was.
I was like, yay, lockdown. Every cabinet got cleaned. Everything got purged. You know, the garage is clean. The closets are cleaned. I think for me, it was, you know, as we all have, we know and have lost dear friends and relatives to, you know, COVID. I think the worldview is that, you know, I remember seeing this whenever it was, what, January of 19, this one little tiny dot in the middle of, and then within a week, the dots were like, it was that movie, whatever that movie is called, Pandemic or something. And it was everywhere in a matter of, and how unprepared we were and how just really made us as a world, how vulnerable we are to something like this. So I think for me, it wasn't the personal space that it was really sitting back and reflecting, going, wow, we look at how we were not able to educate our kids. We weren't ready. I mean, you think of, you know, schools that close because of weather or schools that have to close because of the fires. And then you've got this pandemic where we close everything around the world and how unprepared we were. Now we're better off now because of it, but that really was, really changed my worldview of a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely. The vulnerability and connectivity in so many ways, like how we are connected and disconnected.
Yeah.
And, you know, even thinking just from schooling, from an ed tech perspective, from a social emotional learning. I mean, there's so many different ways to think about just that word around connectivity.
Yes.
And who we are. And how vulnerable it left us, but also the vulnerability around care and really being who we needed to be in that space too.
Well, and when I thought about that, I thought, you know, as adults, you know, we can get on Zoom and we can all do it. But my mind, you know, having been in the LA system for a bit, my mind went to the families, the families that are living in multiple families in one single dwelling or one apartment, and, you know, the lack of connectivity and the lack of tech and the lack of all, I mean, so some of us were fortunate to be able to get through that for lots of things, being able to go for a walk, being able to, but there are so many, my heart just continues to break for what we lost during the pandemic and some of the families that really suffered tremendously because of it.
Yeah. Well, they say when your heart breaks, you can see all the love that was inside it and let it pour out. And I think so much of us have experienced that.
Yeah.
You know, I have one of those, maybe it's even related to around this idea of strength, one of those sentence starters. So let's finish this one. I became a stronger person after.
I go back to my early days of how I landed where I am right now as a woman and a leader. I think for me, my journey started when I left the house when I was 16 years of age and was on my own, paid my way through college. Had to do everything on my own at the age of 16. And you know, that was for a variety of reasons, which I spoke about earlier. But I think when you are on your own and you can only lean on yourself, you have to become quite resourceful and resilient. And I would say that that's really when I became a stronger young person, young adult.
And I have one as well. My life improved when I...
It improved and it changed dramatically when I made the decision to leave my comfort zone of pre-K-12 education and, you know, being a boots on the ground, hands-on person and actually move into a university setting to sort of help people that couldn't understand with all of the research they've done why nobody was implementing it. And then you get there and you look at it and say, well, it's because it's not practitioner friendly. There's no connectivity here. And so I think my life changed forever when I took the leap of going from a comfort area that I knew very well to an area that's research in a university setting. And from there became even, you know, more exposed to some national things. And that's really where my connectivity was made nationally. How I met the Carl Cohns of the world, how I made other connections with other people in education. And so I think for me, that was the start of a very big change in my life.
Yeah, huge change. And as you think about that, there's also a very personal decision around improving your life. And I'm curious to finish that one. You know, how did you personally change your life? And I think maybe even related to the healing that you've done and you've shared with us.
You know, personally changed my life is really, really, again, what I said before, knowing your stuff, not being afraid to, you know, see a therapist if you need to, see a life coach if you need to, you know, really lean on other strong folks that are there to just be, you know, a loving mutual ear that's not going to candy coat, but it's also going to support you, help get through some difficult times and difficult conversations. So I think, I mean, I'm a huge advocate for, you know, speaking your truth, understanding your privilege and really, you know, getting help when you need help. And it could be over something that to somebody else might be really trivial and that's sort of a no-brainer. And to you, it's a huge mountain. So just, you know, get some help and get some support to get through it.
Yeah. Lean in. Find your allies, as you mentioned earlier, with your tenets.
Yep.
And get really passionate about that you have been not just a person who talks about the work, but you really walk it and model it each and every day. And, you know, I personally have journeyed with you through the literature that I've read, but also really how you've led incredibly complex systems. And I'll admit it, I've had some really good belly laughs with you, Judy, and that has reminded me about how important it is to be human in this work. Yeah. And surround yourself with people who love and care for you, and then build those circles. Yeah. And you have modeled that today. And again, you model it each and every day. And so as I think about what I've learned, I'm curious, I always, you know, I put Keisha on the spot. And, you know, she's been taking copious notes. I've been seeing her pencil and her pen move around with highlights during this conversation. And so, Keisha, it's time for me to check in with you. What have you been learning from my amazing friend, Dr. Judy Elliott?
It is true. I'm always tested at the end of our podcast. It's my eternal punishment for cheating, I guess, at some point early in life on a test. I don't know that I did, but I feel like I'm still being punished. Anyway.
I doubt it.
I have learned a lot from our conversation, and other than just, I've read your stuff, so I was familiar when Frances said that you were going to be on our show, but what I've learned is that you're a risk taker from a very, very early age, which means you have a tremendous belief in yourself, in your self-worth, and your self-capacity, which I think is something that a lot of our kids today are lacking. I don't know why, but I feel like if we could just take a tablespoon of you and sprinkle it around to all the kids, they would have a much more meaningful life experience. I think that you follow your heart and you listen to your mentors and you are a humble leader with a tremendous amount of grace, willing to say I goofed up when I goof up. I think Long Beach Unified was your pivot point in your career where you were like, hey, everything is from this point on, I'm on a different trajectory. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool. I love it when people can isolate that moment or that point, because I think it helps others who are following in our footsteps be aware of when that moment occurs in their lives and to listen to it instead of like avoid it and run from it. I think you represent the evolution of an evolutionary leader. I love your perspective on the pandemic, especially the vulnerability of our society. Within a blink, we can literally be obliterated if, you know. So it's very, that's also humbling and surreal. And if I had three words to describe you, I would choose resourceful, resilient, and remarkable.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
Thank you for being on our show.
Good job, Keisha.
I see a pattern of ours now.
Hey, that's our next season.
You know, Judy, as we think about what Keisha shared, we're also wondering if there was something you would want to tell your younger self as you look back and think about what she shared with you. What might that be?
Oh, gosh. I would say, no matter what gets thrown at you, make every day count in one way or another. You know, life and our health, we take for granted, but it's precious and we can never take it for granted. And that just comes with you know, growing up in age and losing some folks to different diseases. And so while we have these really precious gifts of life and health, use them every day to impact change for underserved and disadvantaged folks. I always look back and say, I understand white privilege. And I also know that in my heart of hearts, if I was not white and I would have been of color or of a different background, I don't think I would be here today speaking with you. Mm-hmm. So to me, what would I say? Don't take things for granted and just make every day count. And so for me, the privilege of not just being white, but just having gotten this far and standing upright and being successful is not to be taken for granted. So I just, you know, enjoy what you do and live life to its fullest and always pay it forward.
Such a strong awareness and such a strong sense of truth and understanding the realities of the truth that we stand in. You know, we can't thank you enough, Judy, for joining us today and sharing your wisdom and leadership. And, you know, Keisha, in the space of gratitude, you know, I've got one of those coaching questions for you and our audience. And so are you ready for today's coaching question?
I'm ready.
All right. So in honor of Judy, for our listeners, today's coaching question is, how might you infuse passion, stand in your truth, and lead with integrity as an efficacious woman? Again, how might you infuse passion, stand in your truth, and lead with integrity as an efficacious woman?
Oh, that's a good one, Frances. You keep getting better and better at this. Well, Judy, we cannot thank you enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us sharing your incredible journey to leadership and inspiring not only us, but our listeners on what their potential is as a leader in not only education, but in probably any field, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So please join us to our amazing audience for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. Frances and I will be thinking about what the R's can be coming up. And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, that's ROLE, and respond to the coaching question that Frances just shared. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, ROLE.